Hi everyone, welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Chris Reisner. Today I'm joined again by Hashi Bai.
Hello.
And today we have our special guest, Mike Hall. Mike, would you like to introduce yourself, tell people what you're here to talk about?
Sure. My name is Mike Hall. I'm a Principal Software Architect in the Technology and Research New Experiences and Technologies Group. And today I'm going to be talking about the bot framework and conversational user experiences.
Awesome. Well, I'm really excited to have some bot framework stuff on the show. I was really excited when we saw the announcements at Build, so this is going to be awesome. Before we get into the bot framework stuff, we are going to go through a little bit of news. I think it's been a couple weeks since we've done this, so there's some fun stuff to talk about. First of all, we announced platform-supported migration of IaaS resources from Classic to Resource Manager. So if you're familiar with deployment on Azure, there's kind of the old ASM mode and then the new Azure Resource Manager mode. Mm-hmm. And what we're enabling here is converting from those old style resources into the new Resource Manager resources, specifically right now with virtual machines. Mm-hmm. So that opens up a lot of scenarios as far as the templates you can use with ARM and the redeployment and the resource groups and stuff like that. So that's a really great stuff there. As far as stuff that's been GA'd, we announced the Azure SQL Database Elastic Pools are now generally available, so that's production approved. And then we also announced the general availability of Azure CDN from, I think it's Akamai, is that right, Hashi?
Yeah, you know.
So that's generally available now as well, so ready to be used. That's another worldwide CDN that you can use as part of your Azure deployments. So another bit of news, Azure Mobile Services, we announced a transition from that to Azure App Service, specifically mobile apps. So essentially, mobile apps, which are part of app services, has been kind of like a version 2 of mobile services. And we've started a path a little while back where you could actually migrate from a mobile service to a mobile app. We're kind of now enforcing that. So sometime down the road, I believe it's September of this year, we're going to manually or automatically migrate people if they choose to just wait. Mm-hmm. What you can do right now, if you do have mobile services, you can go in and migrate yourself. There's a whole lot of guides here, and we'll point to this in the show notes beneath the show, as far as how you can deploy your current mobile service in a test environment as a mobile app, so you can test things out, make sure they work before you do the production switch over.
So will the mobile service be discontinued?
Yeah, so at some point in time, the mobile services will actually be discontinued. I think there's a schedule on here. So as of August 2016, you won't actually be able to create any new mobile services. And then by December, any mobile services would actually be shut down, but by then you'd be migrated to mobile apps.
Cool.
So essentially, mobile services are going away because mobile apps are so much better.
Yep.
So some news on the data center front. We announced some acceleration, or rather general availability of local data centers in Toronto and Quebec City in Canada, as well as a new data center region, based in Seoul in South Korea. So we're adding even more data centers. So our deployment is just getting monumentally huge, which is great. And then the last bit of news we'll cover today is the introduction of Azure Cool Blob Storage. So essentially this is if you have blobs that you don't need to access very often, you can use the Cool Blob Storage tier, which is a lower cost for storage, a little less reliability on accessing as compared to the hot blob storage, mm-hmm. But a cheaper way to store those blobs that you don't need to access very frequently.
Yeah, it's a perfect solution for archiving historical data that you can just keep it around for compliance requirement for a really long time at a really low cost.
Exactly right. All right, that was our news today. And now we'll go ahead and switch over to our main segment. All right, and we're back. All right, Mike, let's see what you have.
OK, great. So at Build 2016, we talked about the bot framework and developing bots using the bot framework.
Yes.
So what I'm here today to do is basically give you a run through on developing something, maybe showing some of the features that we didn't show at the bot framework,
awesome.
Supporting different channels, writing applications that aren't using a messaging app directly, but just use the channel directly to a bot from an application that you build as well.
Okay, great.
All right.
And we will link to some of the build presentations on bot framework beneath here. So stuff we don't cover here today, you'll be able to see on those videos as well.
Right, great. So why don't we get started? The first thing I'm going to do is go into Visual Studio 2015. We have two SDKs that you can download, one of which is the C# SDK. That's for building an ASP.NET bot. Mm-hmm. And the other one is for a JavaScript-based bot using Node.js.
Okay.
So for the demo today, I'm going to use C#, but all of the things I'll be showing really apply to the Node experience as well.
Okay. Right. Now, are these like packages that install new templates, or is it specifically you create like an ASP.NET site and just add a NuGet package?
Okay. So what you'll see here when I say file new project in, if I can select file new project in Visual Studio 2015, there are a number of templates built in. One of the templates is the bot application template,
okay.
Right? So if you go to botframework.com, and you click on downloads, you'll see there are a number of downloads, one of which is the SDK, one of which is the emulator that we're using here.
Great.
You can use the same emulator not only to test bots you've built locally on your machine, but you can also point it to a bot that you've deployed on Azure or some other hosting site and test that bot there as well.
Okay, so like remote debugging, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. So obviously you can do both. Inside of Visual Studio, you can debug locally. So I can actually, you'll see this in a second. I'll build a bot, we'll deploy it, you'll see it run. Mm-hmm. I can run up the emulator, we can talk to the bot.
Yep.
You know, great. I can also deploy to my hosting site. Mm-hmm. I can either obviously debug using Visual Studio, or I can send messages to it through the emulator and see the return messages
great.
As well.
Okay.
Right. So we'll get to see that in just a second. So why don't we get started, just build a basic bot, right? So I'm going to say OK, and this is going to generate the application template, the application kind of baseline code for this bot. And I could, in effect, just build it, deploy it, run it, and it will run locally on my machine, hosted by IIS Express locally. But I can also publish it to Azure or somewhere else and then, you know, run it there, right? So there are a couple of things to point out, the first of which is the web config file. So in here, you'll see that there's an app ID and an app secret. So by default, these are set to your app ID, your app secret. When you go to botframework.com and you register your new bot, you can set the app ID on that bot and also generate the app secret that you'll then paste in here.
Okay.
So typically the flow here is go into Visual Studio, create the bot, build the bot, deploy the bot, either locally or up to Azure or somewhere, and then go into botframework.com, register the bot, get the app secret from the bot framework site, come back to the bot that you've generated, drop the app secret that was generated when you register your bot, and then redeploy your bot.
And
then all the pieces are hooked together and everything just works.
Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's the first thing to show. The second thing to show is this file called default.htm. Obviously, if you're going to be building and deploying your bot to some web-hosted location, that means that you can also browse to that location, mm-hmm. right? So I'll show you an example in just a couple of seconds of a bot that I've been working on, that when you first start the bot and you say hi, kind of thing, the first thing it says is, hey, welcome to this bot, and I'll tell you what the bot is in a second.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, to get more instructions on how to use this bot, here's a web URL.
Okay.
And when you click that URL, it takes you to the default.htm hosted within the bot itself,
okay.
right?
Great.
So that's kind of neat. Mm-hmm.
Are you limited as far as what you can deploy with the bot? Like, could it be a full ASP.NET web application as well?
So when I build this and deploy it, in effect, this is an ASP.NET application.
Okay.
Right. So there is one endpoint that is registered as part of the application, which we'll see in just a second. We'll actually go take a look at the code. But you can easily add additional endpoints there as well. If you wanted to expose a REST endpoint off of the same application, you could do that if you wanted to. Right. Okay. So what I'm going to do is open up controllers. Messages controller. So this is where the meat of the bot is, in effect. So this is the entry point for our bot. You can see that this returns a message, it takes a message, and inside of this function, I deal with whatever that message is. So if this bot is running, and the user of this bot is connected using some messaging application, and when I say some messaging application, one of the kind of real benefits of using the bot framework is you as a developer write your bot once. You register the bot on the bot framework site,
mm-hmm.
and then you make a decision as to which of the number of messaging applications you want to light that up on, right? So you may say, I only want this available to an application that I've written,
mm-hmm.
and that's a channel called Direct Line, which we'll see shortly,
okay.
right? Or you could say, actually, I want it everywhere. I want it on Slack and Skype and Facebook Messenger and Telegram and GroupMe and SMS and email, and you know the list goes on and on, right? So you make that decision about where you want it published and where you want it visible.
Okay.
Right? Okay.
Actually, I don't know if you get these questions a lot. How do you compare the Azure bot with Azure functions in terms of having a triggered event to trigger some functionalities?
Right. Okay. So there are two things that you can do as a developer of the bot, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can either just respond directly to an inbound message.
Mm-hmm.
So if I type hi or hello or something, then that message comes in, I deal with that message here.
Mm-hmm.
But once that messaging stream is set up with a user, a conversation is started,
mm-hmm.
the bot can use async messaging to send responses at any time, right?
Oh, okay.
So for example, I could create a bot that is looking for some specific trigger, right? Tell me when this stock goes above or below this value, for example, or tell me when some event has occurred,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's the start of the conversation. And when that's occurred, my bot can then use a function called send message async, mm-hmm. which can then just reply outside of the conversation back to the user.
Okay. Right. And so the a bot, it can be attached to a conversation. It's in the so the context of conversation is carried over.
Right. Okay. Yes, yes. So we'll see that in just a second.
Oh, okay, right? Okay. I'll
show you how that part works. Okay. Your bot is in effect stateless. So your bot will run, it exposes its interface, messages arrive, you deal with the message, mm-hmm. you respond to the message, and then you know, return, right? Mm-hmm. At that point, you've lost state, but you have the ability within your bot mm-hmm. to save the state back to one of the components in the bot framework. We'll talk about the various pieces in just a second.
Okay.
So you'll see how that works shortly, right?
All right.
Okay. So in effect, what I'm doing is I'm checking the message type. If the message type is a message, which means a user interaction, you know, hello, hi, here's my next move in the game, or whatever it is, then I can do something with that message. And by default, the template that we create simply gets the length of the message, hello, that's 5, right? And then return, you sent, in this case, 5 characters, right?
Yeah.
So very easy for you to test and prove that your bot is up and running, right? So that's if the message is of type message. Mm-hmm. But there are other message types supported as well. So if it's not message, then we call a function called handle system message. And here we simply switch on the various message types. Ping, is your bot still alive? Delete user data, which is actually part of the thing that you were asking just a couple of seconds ago, which we'll see shortly,
right?
Bot added to conversation, bot removed from conversation, user added, and user removed from conversation, right? So there are a number of system events. What you'll see in some messaging applications, for example, Telegram, when you kick off a new conversation with a user, it sends a /start without the user doing anything, right, to start the conversation. So you could easily, you know, trigger on that and send a message back saying, oh, hi, welcome, you know, welcome to the bot or whatever, right?
Cool.
So what I can do is just build this as is, and that succeeded. I'm going to run that, and that fires up in IIS Express. Here's the default.htm file that we saw from inside of the project just a couple of seconds ago. I'm then going to launch the emulator, the bot framework emulator. Need to size that just a little. And what we'll see along the top here is that we can send any of those system messages, system events to the bot. Here's my locale. That's kind of interesting. When you write the bot, you as a developer may be, you know, thinking in one language, but the user that's connected on whatever messaging format may be using German or French or, you know, whatever, right? So the bot framework has the ability to detect the language that the user is typing in, determine the language that you've registered your bot in, auto-translate the text so you get it in your language.
Oh, that's nice.
Right?
So you don't even have to worry about the localization. It'll do it
exactly.
for you.
I mean, you totally can do that, right?
Right.
So you can, in effect, ignore that default translation. You can get the text, and you can have your local resources, you know, pre-localized within the bot. But, I mean, that's kind of neat, right?
That's really awesome, actually.
So here's the user. Here's the current conversation ID. So, you know, I can type something in here. Hello. And you know, there's my message. Oh, forbidden. That's because that is set incorrectly. So if I say hi, you sent 2 characters, right? And what you can see is the message format, which is a JSON document shown on the right-hand side, right? So this is kind of useful for debugging. I can send a message. I can see what I've sent. I get return back, I can see what's returned.
Okay.
So that's kind of useful.
So you're actually seeing the JSON that your endpoint receives.
Yes, exactly.
Great.
Right. Yep. And I can step up the list. So if I click on my message, you can see here's the text that I sent, hi. And if I click on this one, then we can obviously see the response that I get back. You sent 2 characters, right?
Cool.
So that's kind of useful. I can see the interaction between the user and the bot.
Absolutely.
Right? So that's kind of neat. So, you know, that's a fairly simple bot. It doesn't do anything particularly useful. I send it something, it says, you sent me this number of characters, right? So that's kind of how we get started. The next thing to show you is if I kind of open up another one of the applications that I've got here, is this application layers some additional functionality on top. So, in effect, what this is doing, same as before, is checking the message to see whether I've got a message. If it's a message, meaning the user sent me something, I call a function that I've written just below here called getStock. So this is going to look up a stock ticker name and then return me, hopefully, the value of whatever that stock is.
Okay.
Right? So if I run this and then reconnect using the emulator, And I don't necessarily have to shut the emulator down. If I just change the conversation ID, that's in effect the same as, you know, shutting it down and bringing it back up, because it's in effect starting a new conversation.
I see.
Right? So if I type something in here, like Microsoft, for example, I should get the stock value coming back, right? Because it's calling a web service, getting that value and then returning it and then sending that back as the response,
okay.
Right? So pretty straightforward. I can type something that's hopefully not a stock ticker, and I get, you know, that doesn't appear to be valid.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm checking the return value. Is
right.
it null or is it something? And if it's null, give this message. And if it's something, then show something, right?
Okay. Cool.
But what you might say from there is, you know, pretty impressive, right? Doing amazing things, but it's not really conversational.
Sure.
Right? What we really want to be able to do is have a conversation with the bot in some way using natural language.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely.
So what I'll do now is switch to another application that's pre-built. So in effect, this is doing much the same kind of thing. There's a little more code here because I'm doing something a little more interesting, right? So what I'm saying here is, if the message is a message, call this function that I've got here called Lewis Stock Client. So I'm making use of one of the Microsoft Cognitive Services here. So the Language Understanding Intelligence Service gives me the ability to build a model so I can train it on intents and entities.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, in this case, for this application, I'm really looking for a few things. The user asking, show me the value of this stock, or tell me what the value of this stock is. You know, and there are a number of ways that a user could ask that thing, right?
But the whole idea though is that, you know, any of those are, what is the value of the stock, right?
Right. And so the intent there would be, show me the stock, show me the value.
Mm-hmm.
And then the entity part would be the ticker name that I'm interested in, right? But that's only one part of it. Really what you want the bot to be able to do is perhaps remember the last stock that I was interested in. So then I can go back and ask it, hey, so tell me about the last stock that I was interested in,
right,
without me necessarily having to remember what the name of that stock ticker
so,
was.
So actually right. be conversational and remember things
yes.
as opposed to just
exactly
know,
right.
question and answer period.
Yeah, yeah. So here's the function that makes the call to the Lewis API. And that's held in a class here called Lewis.cs. And this will return a number of intents and entities back within a JSON document that I serialize into a class here, and then I can obviously read the elements out of the class.
So could you, for example, use to say, you know, what is the stock price of several stocks, and it'll return those several entities to you then?
You could do that.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. That would be kind of useful, right?
Sure.
So in effect, all I'm doing, there's a URI endpoint for the Lewis model that I've built, and you can just see the start of the application ID kind of flowing off the right side of the code window here. So this is just making a call to that endpoint, and it's passing in, as part of that, the text that I have URI escaped from what the user typed, right? So if I type, show me the value of Microsoft, right? That is what will be passed in on the end of this query. And then what I'll get back is a JSON document that I serialize into the object that I then return back to the main application.
Okay.
And in the application code, in effect, what I'm doing here is checking, do I have any intents? And then if I do have intents, I look for, you know, was it the repeat the last stock intent? Or was it the second thing that I'm looking for, which is show me the stock price of something, right? So what you may have kind of missed as we stepped over this code is this line here. So on the message, I'm able to make a call to get bot user data. So this, on the inbound message, there's, in effect, a state attached to the message. So the various parts of the bot framework, you've got your bot, right? You've got something called the bot connector. And the bot connector is the thing that sends and receives messages to and from your bot. And that's also the thing we've already mentioned that does the language translation part
okay.
for you.
Mm-hmm.
But it is also the state store for your bot conversation.
Okay.
So your bot, when it receives a message, can attach state to that message, send it back to the client, and the bot connector will hold that state. When the next message comes in, reattach the state, and then send it back to your bot.
Okay, and right. is that storage that kind of black box? You can basically say fetch it or put it, but you don't have any control underlying?
You do have control. So you can think of this as, in effect, a dictionary, right?
Okay.
So you name the elements within the state that you want to store. So the one of the bots that I'm building is a game. Actually, I have several bots on the go at the moment.
Okay.
Some have more complicated state than others.
Mm-hmm.
One of the bots is a port of the original Star Trek text-based, turn-based game,
awesome.
Right? Which is kind of neat.
And that's because you already finished Zork, right?
Well, so
that is work.
this is all part time, right? Interestingly, I also did a port of the Star Trek game to the Windows Store. So Star Trek Classic is in the store, as well as Colossal Cave Adventure.
Oh yes,
excellent. Both text based, turn based games, right? Mm-hmm. So I've taken that Star Trek code and I've built that into a bot.
Okay.
And there's some interesting elements around that. It's still kind of turn based, which you'd expect from a conversational piece, mm-hmm. but you can imagine the state of the galaxy and everything else that's going on in it is the state that I need to store between messages, right? So there's some relatively complex state that's getting stored there. In this case, I'm only really storing one thing. In that case, it's an entire object that's getting serialized and stored. In this case, I'm really only interested in storing a string.
Okay.
So the name of the element that I'm storing is called last stock. And
so for the state is maintained by the bot connector.
Yes.
And what's the scope of this state? Is it in the conversation or by connector or?
So there are two different models. One of which is at the conversation level, and the other one is at the user level, because you can imagine that a conversation could potentially have multiple people in there. Whereas in this case, I'm storing this on the user data rather than the conversation data.
Okay.
Right. Mm. So. If there is no state, in effect, what I'm going to get back is a null, right? Because there is no state held on the message.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to return a message that says, I don't have a previous stock to look up. If there is previous state, then I call the function that we saw previously to get the stock and then return the value to the mm-hmm. user, right? So that's kind of neat. If I just ask for the stock outright, then I'm just going to call that function, right? So when we come down further, if it's not one of those intents, then I simply say, sorry, I don't understand. Obviously, you could prompt in different ways there, right? So here's the interesting piece, or the magic for attaching the state onto the message.
Mm.
So previously, you just saw that we did message.createReplyMessage, and I sent my message, right? So what I'm doing here is I'm creating a message called replyMessage, and in there, I am making a call to setBotUserData on that replyMessage, and then I'm returning the message, right? Okay, so if we build this and then run this, again, here's the web page, right? I'm gonna come back to the emulator. Again, I didn't actually need to shut that down, but I did. So what I should now be able to do is ask it, how about now, which was one of the phrases that I put in to basically get it to tell me about the last stock that I was interested in, right? And so what this should come back with is no stored state. So I don't have a previous stock to look up, right? So now rather than just typing the ticker name like MSFT, for example, I can say, show me Microsoft or something. And that should get me the current value, right? So it's starting to become more conversational now, right? So if I now say, how about now? And both of you now understand what's happening within the code.
Right.
We've stored that state on the message, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I now ask, how about now? We should now return the state, get the value that we last looked up, and then return that to
and
the
so
user.
Essentially what happened was when you sent that how about now, it went to the bot connector, which pulled out the state, sent it to your bot, which therefore could access that state, send it back to the bot connector, and then back to you.
The state is attached to the inbound message when I type how about now as the client, and I hit enter. So I could be in Skype or Telegram or something, right? So there are a number of front-end client applications, a number of different messaging applications. You type something there, you send your message, the bot connector will look at the message, it will reattach the state to it, send it back to your bot.
Yep.
So your bot doesn't actually have to do a fetch on it.
Mm.
The state is already on the message that it
just
gets.
Passes it just pulls it out of that user data that comes from
that's right. Yeah, on the message, that's right.
So here's another question. So let's say I have two users, using two different clients, talking to the same bot.
Sure.
And there's a conversational state.
Right.
How does status synchronize between the two clients? Or is they're just making round trips every
time? Yeah. So a bot that shows off a number of these different features, I'll show you in a couple of minutes, right? So what you will notice there is, this is a port of another old game called Hunt the Wumpus. Right? Are you familiar with this?
I don't think I've heard of that one.
So very, very old computer game. You're in a map. It's based on a dodecahedron.
Mm.
There are 20 points on it. Each point that you're at has three lines coming off of it, or three rooms that you can move to.
Okay.
Right? There are bats in the maze. If you go into a room that has bats, they pick you up and drop you randomly somewhere else. There are some pits in the maze, and if you go into a room with pits, you're dead.
Mm-kay.
And there's this mythical beast called the Wumpus. So you're trying to find it. It's moving around the map trying to find you. you've got some arrows you can shoot, right? Okay. So there's a port of that. So the port of that that I'll show you in a few minutes runs across. I've made this available on all of the different channels, right? So I can talk to it on Skype and Telegram and web chat and direct line and, you know, all these various things, SMS and email and so mm-hmm. on, right? So in effect, each of those different conversations are all treated as individual conversations,
right?
So I could be in one state on Telegram and a different state on Skype and a different state on Facebook and a different state on something else, right? Mm-hmm. You could, if you wanted to, have linked state within your bot that gives you, you know, a more kind of global environment so that everybody that's interacting with it is in effect seeing the same state. But that's an implementation detail. Right now, each conversation and user is different, and therefore I'm giving them their own unique state.
So it would also be possible for me to, say, have a shared state between all of my interactions with a bot, so let's say between Skype and email and text, but we'd have to figure out how to implement that differently from just the user or conversation.
Yeah. So what I'm doing in this bot, and actually some of the other bots that I'll be showing you, is using the message as the state store, right? One of the other bots that I've created uses SQLite as the local state store. So I'm not, in that case, I'm not relying on the message and the message state mm-hmm. to save my state.
So, right? so you can do your own state saving if you want.
That's
to,
right.
Of course.
Yeah.
Great.
And what's the experience of deploying that SQLite into the bot framework? So the bot framework has built-in support for that. You can just
So in this case, if we kind of roll back just a few minutes and you remember the far new project mm-hmm. Piece where we created that new bot, mm-hmm. I then went to NuGet, SQLite, added that in. My code checked to see whether there was an existing database. Mm-hmm. If there wasn't one, it created it, created the schema, wrote some basic data into there, right? So from that standpoint, if I build that bot and I publish it to, say, the Azure as an ASP.NET application, mm-hmm. there's nothing else that I need to do. It just works.
Right?
There was one thing that I needed to do locally, and that is set user permissions on the folder that was running the bot locally mm-hmm. so that IIS had the ability to write to it. Yep.
Makes sense. Yep.
But that was it, right? Okay, so happy with this so far?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, great. So that's all kind of neat. And what we've been looking at so far is dealing with stock, right? So what you'll find in many cases is the conversation that you're having with the user isn't just a simple kind of do this, here's the response, do this, here's the response, right? You might have multiple steps to complete some task. So you know, the example that most people kind of give is ordering a pizza, right? So you want to order a pizza, you know, you need to choose the size, you need to choose the toppings. You may have some extras like breadsticks or whatever else you want to go with that. So writing that in code individually and keeping track of the state and what has been answered so far and so on, you can imagine there's a reasonable amount of code to do that, right?
Definitely.
So one of the great things about the bot framework is this notion of form filling. So I can create a class that contains the elements that I need to be filled. I can annotate it with various kind of prompts and descriptions, and then I can basically tell the bot framework, you know, fill this, right?
Okay.
So in this case, we're still using the stock model, right? So you can imagine buying or selling a stock, right? I'm interested in what is the ticker, how many shares, what is the ticker name that I'm interested in? You know, there's a whole bunch of stuff there that you know, need to be filled in. What date do I want to sell it?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a confirmation. Are you sure you want to do this thing, right? So in this case, I've got a class, and if I come down to the bottom of this, you'll see that there are a number of elements. So I've got a string called stock ticker. You can see the prompt up here, which stock ticker are you interested in? Do I want to buy or sell? Yeah, that's a Boolean, number of shares, the order date, right? Obviously, I can have more elements to this as well, you know, mm-hmm. right?
Sorry, what does the double bar mean?
So that is the item for the element. So. We'll actually see this in just a second.
Okay.
Right. So just defining the elements within the class isn't really enough. So within the class itself, what I'm doing is I'm creating a new form builder class. And then within that, I have a number of things to do. So I can send a message saying, you know, welcome to the Stockbot. And then I can start adding various elements in the order that I want them into the form. So the first thing that I'm going to ask is for the stock ticker. You know, which ticker are you interested in? Mm-hmm. Now, if you remember, the stock ticker was a string, right? So a string can be open-ended. You can't have predefined validation. So on an integer, for example, you could say, you could annotate this to say, I need a value between 1 and 10.
Right.
And then you can work with that. But on something like a string, you know, you ask, give me a stock, and I could say pepperoni pizza. Well, I mean, that's not really a valid stock,
it's
right?
Too bad it isn't.
So we give you the ability to validate that directly, right? So what I'm now doing is I create a validate result within this method, and I call our, stock API that we've already seen a number of times. If it's not valid, I return the feedback as that's not valid and set the result to be false. Mm-hmm. And if it is valid, I then say, yes, that is valid and it's currently at this amount, right? And then I set the result to be true.
Okay.
And then the rest of the form is just kind of in line. Do I want to buy or sell? What's the order date? How many shares? And then a confirmation. Do you want to buy or sell this number of shares of this stock, right? And then on completion, if I say yes, then I've got a breakpoint set here. Obviously, this point here is the place that I could, call web service to actually go make that happen.
Right.
So why don't we go take a look at this?
So basically, that specifies the order that the question should be answered, and
yes.
Then also or asked and answered, and then also any validation you want to have.
Exactly right. Yeah. So let's come back to the emulator. In this case, we're using the emulator, but I could obviously just as easily deploy this up to Azure or somewhere, and then run it from there. So I'm going to say hi, and we should get welcome to the stock body. If you remember, that was the welcome message that we saw. Right, and then we come into the first element within the form. And I'm not writing any real code here apart from defining the form, the order, and some very simple validation.
Right.
So I could type something, and it says, that's not valid. Which stock are you interested in? So I can say, Microsoft, do you want to buy or sell? Underneath this, you'll notice that these are options, right? Do I want to one, buy, or two, sell?
Mm-hmm.
Depending on which channel I'm on, so for example, if I'm on Telegram, this will show these as buttons rather than as options, right? So I can just, if I'm on my phone, for example, I could just tap the button rather than having to type something.
Sure.
But here I could either enter number one or the string buy, or number two or the string sell, right? So I can say, I want to buy tomorrow. How many shares? I don't know, let's pick a number, 1,000. Do you want to buy 1,000 shares of this on tomorrow? And I say yes, the breakpoint fires, and obviously we go do something interesting with all the data we've got there, right? So that's pretty neat, form filling.
Very cool.
So you could easily imagine now pulling a number of these different technologies together, right? So I could have the direct question answer, I could have the Lewis model, which is conversational, and based on the intended entities I get back from that, I could drop into this dialogue model,
right?
And say, that's great, now let's fill out this form,
right?
Okay, so the last thing that I want to show you is an instance of a bot that I've been working on. So this is actually the Wumpus bot.
Okay,
right?
Awesome.
So the reason why this is kind of interesting is that this is using a slightly different model of dialogue. So this, if I come up to the top of the application, is using this model here, which is called promptdialogue.choice, right? So when the game starts, the first thing I'm going to do is prompt and ask you, I have five maps, right? Dodecahedron, a Mobius strip, and all kinds of other things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So which map do you want to use,
right?
And once you've chosen a map, I load the map, and then in effect, I get into this kind of routine of, do you want to move or shoot? Which room do you want to move to? Move or shoot? Which room? And so on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Until the game completes. And then once the game is completed, if I type, hi or hello or something, it will kick off the thing. Which map do you want to go? So in this case, I have the next item in the list that I want to go to, which is move or fire. So this is the prompt for move or fire. The map choices, which is an array, you can actually see it here. It's an array 0 to 5, which is the map choices, a welcome message for when this dialogue is entered, and a retry message if I didn't understand what you're asking for, right? So that's kind of neat. And the interesting thing about this as a bot is this is actually deployed across most of the channels that we support, right? So this is a different model of doing prompting. Again, we could mix in pure Q&A and Lewis, And in fact, I'm working on the Lewis model for Hunt the Wumpus right now. So rather than going through the steps of, you know, you're in this room, it leads to these rooms, do you want to move or shoot? Mm-hmm. You could simply say, you're in this room, what do you want to do?
Right.
And I could say, I want to move to room 18, mm-hmm. right? And then I get the intent move and the room number 18, and then I just call the code to do the move.
Right.
So that's very straightforward. Okay, so.
This is the one that you're saving to SQLite then, is that right?
This one I'm not. There's another app that I am. So if I go to Skype, and this is one of the many channels supported, you can see right at the top here, it says, haha, you lose, right? I fell in a pit or something,
right.
So when I say hi, this kicks off a new game. Okay. And so the message says, welcome to Wumpus Bot, and here's that link to the default.htm mm-hmm. file that gives me instructions for using this game, right? So here's the Wumpus Bot instructions. One of the other things that's kind of interesting about this is we have an embeddable chat control that I've embedded directly onto the page for the instructions for the game, right? So
you can just surface it via this alone if you want to.
In here, I could simply type hi, and here's the game now running within the chat control, right? So that's kind of neat.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I'm not sure I want to go back to Skype now. I could actually play it right here.
Right, yeah, exactly right.
Okay, back to Skype. So what we'll see is that, you know, I choose a map. And what this will do is, oh, there's a Wumpus nearby. So yeah, at this point, I should probably shoot and choose one of the three rooms to shoot into.
Okay.
Right. But now you can see that kind of effect of that choice dialogue giving me one prompt, and then I make a selection that's valid, and it moves on to the next prompt, and then I can kind of rotate round through that. Right. Okay. So what we've seen here is this running inside of Skype. But what if you wanted to build your own application? Not using a messaging front end like Slack or Skype or mm-hmm. GroupMe or Telegram or email or SMS or Facebook or whatever, but you're writing your own app, right? You know, how does that look? Well, one of the channels that we support is a channel called Direct Line. So what I've created here is, this is a super simple app. This is a console application, C#. And I've made use of this Direct Line NuGet package that I've added into the application. And in here, it's a console app, right? So it's still text-based, but with a few extra lines of code, this could also use voice rather than text to interact with the bot, right? So I'm creating a Direct Line client. I'm pasting in the token from registering this app as a Direct Line application. And then I'm outputting a command. I'm getting the input from the user. I'm then sending that as a message to the bot through the bot connector. And then I'm waiting for the message to return, and then I kind of output that message to the user. So if I start this as a console application, what I should see is, you know, the prompt, hi, welcome to Wumpus Bot, exactly the same experience mm-hmm. we saw in Skype, right? But this is my own custom application,
right?
In this case, console, but you know, it could be a different class of application, using the exact same interface to talk to my bot. Right.
So in this case, does the Direct Line actually surface itself as a REST API? So really anything could be calling into this?
It is surfaced as a REST API. The NuGet package that I've added, in effect, hides that REST API mm-hmm. model. So it gives me a much higher level API.
Sure.
So I can connect and pass my token. I can send a message. I can receive messages. And then I parse the messages I get back.
But we could build with anything we wanted.
Oh, sure. Yes, of course.
Great.
Very easy. All right, so I think we've covered a lot of ground.
So I've got one other question about
kind
of the state stuff. So let's say you're doing a SQLite or you're doing something a little more advanced.
Yep.
Do you get an identifier tied to whatever messaging platform they're using? So their Skype username or their phone number, et cetera?
Yeah. So you get a number of things. The first thing you get is the channel ID. Mm-hmm. So from there, you can determine which channel is this coming in on.
Mm-hmm.
Is this on Direct Line, is it on Skype, is it on email, is it on Telegram, is it on Facebook, you know, whatever, right?
Sure.
So I can determine from that certain capabilities. So for example, on email, I could either just set the text within the message and respond, in which case I get a response on email which will be in the body of the email that I get back.
Right.
Or within the message, I also have the ability to set some custom elements within the message that I send back. So if I know it's on email, mm-hmm. I could add additional recipients onto that email by setting some metadata within the response message
mm-hmm.
that the email channel would understand what to do with.
Okay.
Right? So channel ID is one, user ID is another, and conversation ID is the third.
Okay.
So the conversation ID would obviously be held across multiple messages.
Yep.
And the user ID is the user that I'm talking to, right? And obviously in a group conversation, you'll have more than one user ID.
Okay.
Right. So I can switch on all of these pieces.
Very cool.
To make a determination what to do.
Great. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay, cool. And where can people go if they've got questions, they want to learn more?
Okay, if you go to botframework.com, everything you need to get started is there. Downloads, documentation, samples. The SDKs are published as a source on GitHub, so you can go up there, you can download them. There is samples to get you started using just the raw Q&A model or dialogues and these kind of things. The samples that we showed at Build are also published on GitHub as well.
Perfect.
So you can get all of that.
And we'll make sure we have links to all that beneath here.
But let's say if a developer saw this and got excited, he wants to write a bot and bot an offer to the world.
Sure.
So what he needs to do? He needs to host the bot somewhere himself and register the bot with the...
So in this case, if I were to go to... I have the console app open, but if I were to pick one of my other bots and go to build and publish, that will start the Azure publishing wizard, right? Mm-hmm. So I'd walk through that wizard. My bot will be published somewhere on Azure. It'll have an endpoint address that I would then register with the botframework.com so that the connector knows how to send and receive messages to my bot, right?
But when you say publish somewhere to Azure, is that the web application I'm managing or Azure is managing something for me?
Yeah, so you can think of this just as a regular ASP.NET application, right? So I write the code, I build the code, I publish it. It will have a defined endpoint address, right? Okay. Azure website, something, my app, something, right? So that address is the address that I now need to register with botframework.com, as well as the app ID and app secret, so that the connector understands where to send messages and what the app ID and app secret is that it interacts with, right?
Understood.
Some of the messaging channels have a built-in model for discovering bots, Skype, for example. Others do not. So there's also a bot directory that you can go to on botframework.com to look at bots as well.
I see. Cool.
And now where do people go if they want to play with the Wampus?
It's not in the directory yet.
Okay.
And hopefully will be shortly.
Okay.
Right? If you're on Telegram, it's at WampusBot. I can give you the details of how
to
get it
on
other channels
as well.
That.
Everybody's going to want to play with
that. Sure, of course.
Great. And then do you have a Twitter handle in case people want to reach out to you?
No.
No Twitter handle. Wow. But we can reach out to the Wampus, though.
Sure, of course.
Great. Yeah. Okay, awesome. Well, Mike, this has been awesome. You know, I've got some great ideas of stuff I could build with this, and I'm excited to see what other people are going to build.
Great. Fantastic. Thanks so much.
Yeah, absolutely. And everybody out there, thanks for watching us. Make sure to follow us on Cloud Cover Show, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.